in him. With the bases loaded, an intentional walk to Barry Bonds.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God.
Deep to right field. Way.
Hello and welcome in, everyone, to episode 158 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. And today I am back with Joe Gentile of Fake Teams. You can follow on Twitter at JoeGentileFT. This is our weekly Cup of Joe. Well, bi-weekly at this point. We skipped last week. But hey, Joe, welcome in, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
To be full disclosure, we just talked for about 20 minutes off air. So, you know, it's just a bunch of frustration. But time to get away from that. And time to have some fun and talk some baseball. So today we're talking, the list of names you brought are pretty much all call-ups. Some of them have been sent back down, but ultimately there's roughly 10 names here. I didn't count. I'm just eyeballing about 10 names here. We're going to try to get into all of them over the next hour. And we can just jump right into it. Luis Patino. I mean, he had a rough outing the other night. There's no way around it. It was seven runs total over just 5.1 innings pitched. It was at Buffalo, so it's like the cores of the East, or the AL East, I should say. He was sent back down after that. However, there were some encouraging signs. He was pitching a little better of late. What are your thoughts on Patino rest of season, and are you stashing him if you have him, or are you willing to pick him up on the low if he's available and stash him?
The stashing, probably not. I mean, I guess it probably depends on your league and how deep it is. With 15-team, like, NFBC leagues, the benches are full of injuries right now, so it's really hard to stash guys, but I do see some encouraging signs. He did rework his slider this year. It's a little bit faster, but it has a little bit less break, but what I've seen is it is causing him to get a higher chase rate on it, and he has a lower walk rate this year, but the chase rate is he has a higher walk rate. The zone rate is about the same from last year according to Savant, but he does have a better chase rate. With zone rate, something I will say, depending on what site you look at, it's different. I don't know why zone rates are different between sites, but I usually use Savant when I try to talk zone rate. So I believe on Fangraphs, he actually has a higher zone. But he reworked that slider. His four-seam fastball has a lot of rise on it, comes in at about 95 miles an hour. And the problem I see with him, if the command is good, the strikeout should be there, but he won't be a pitcher that has a high ground ball rate. He's going to have a very high fly ball rate. Not much of his pitches have drops to them. He's not going to get a lot of ground balls, and that might be the problem we're seeing with him right now. Going forward, I think he could probably be maybe a 3.8 type xFIP guy with a 1-2 whip and a 28% K rate. So that's pretty good. The inning concerns are there, so just be wary of that if he gets the call.
That peak projection line that you kind of just put out there, I can't even talk right now. That reminds me, like, tell me that doesn't look like Chris Archer. Like, that's what that line looks like right there. That's a Chris Archer line.
Yeah, that is actually. And that's
That's a great – and Chris Archer was very fantasy relevant for quite a few years, always having the upside that he could just never quite hit on outside of, like little runs here and there. So either way, though, a Luis Patino, Chris Archer comp isn't a terrible comp at all. I just thought – I saw that line. I'm like, that's Chris Archer. But, hey, if that's like a peak Chris Archer, so that's not a bad deal. So Patino, he's a guy that right now obviously droppable slash leave him on the waiver wire in most leagues. If you have space for him, he's obviously a stash. But – just keep your eye on him, because when he gets called back up, there's a chance he's probably just going to go right back into the rotation and somebody worth speculating on given the upside. Next guy here, talk about power. His name just looks like somebody who just hits dingers. Jake Berger. Don't know why. I just look at Jake Berger and I think, man, that dude crushes home runs. And that's all he's known for, really. But what do you like about Jake Berger?
He's had a really solid year. I believe he's missed the past couple of years with an injury, so he doesn't have much hype to him. But when he was coming out of the draft, I believe he was a first-round draft pick, had a good amount of hype around his bat, and then he just got hurt, so all that hype kind of died down. But he's a really, really solid bat. In AAA this year, he hit .322 with a .368 on-base percentage and .596 slugging. Had 10 home runs. We did see the strikeouts creep up a little bit once he got to that upper level. And this is something I think we could possibly see stick with him. It's not so much his skill set, it's his chase rate that scares me. He's not known for taking walks. And we were actually talking about this earlier before the podcast. There's also something with more undisciplined hitters that their raw skills could play down because they're so aggressive. They'll make less contact than you probably think. They'll hit, if they're making contact on balls outside the zone, their ground ball rates will usually go up. Their hard hit rate could go down. And also the thing that I'm currently working on, a research project that looks at pitch types and how they affected batters' bat at ball data. There is a little bit of a correlation. It also depends on the batter's swing, but a more patient hitter will see more primary pitches being fastballs in the zone. And if you see more forcing fastballs, you're going to have a higher fly ball rate. If you're more undisciplined, there's a chance you see more secondary pitches, those nasty sliders come in, and it's going to affect your batted ball data. So something, that's my one concern, but really he seems like he kind of, you know, he kind of reminds me the guy that just got optioned, your main Mercedes. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but he has more potential than Mercedes, but he kind of reminds me of that. Hey, he's got some raw tools. He can hit for average, hit for power, but that plate discipline, man, let's just see how that plays out.
I mean, that's not a bad comp at all, especially if he can give you that hot, like a hot start like Mercedes did. And talk about, since we're talking about the White Sox, a comp I gave Andrew Vaughn at the beginning of the year for 2021 was Brian Anderson. Caught some flack on that, but it's kind of close to what we're seeing, like 250-ish middling power, 250-ish batting average. Like, I think he's better than Brian Anderson long-term, but I thought a rookie year of Brian Anderson, which, again, has always been like a top 250 player, was fair, and I caught a lot of flack. So I think I don't know how that just, that popped into my head for some reason, talking about Berger here. But anyway, no one cares about my comps of a player that we're not talking about today. Let's jump over to another Chicago White Sox and Gavin Sheets. I'm not necessarily buying the early power production, having two home runs in four games at the major league level. However, what I do love about him is his plate discipline. At every level, he's never struck out above 20% of the time. I love that, because that right there tells me the hit tool is a safe, solid, high floor hit tool. And a lot of times production will just fall into place with that. Do you agree with that? And also, what are your thoughts on Gavin, for at least going forward in the short term?
I really like Gavin Sheets. I don't know how long he'll stay in the lineup, because they got Lamb returning in July, and then Jimenez and Robert come back in August. But I'm pretty excited about Sheets. I thought he was one of the solid overall minor league prospects this year that was kind of being underrated. As you said, his plate discipline through the minor leagues has been good. He's had underrated power, I think, through the minor leagues. And he can just hit. That's really all it comes down to. He could be someone that I'll say probably maybe a 24% strikeout rate, about league average, maybe 8% walk rate. He's got the raw power to be a 25 home run guy, maybe even the 30 home run guy at his peak over a course of a full season. And he shouldn't kill you in average. He's a really, really solid hitter. And I'm pretty excited over what he can do. I think I had his peak projection probably around 270 batting average, 25, 30 home runs, maybe like a 90-90 guy, which is really good. He's not going to be anyone that flashes off the page, but his overall skill set, when you put it together, really plays. And I mean, this is a guy, they have the exit velocity numbers in the minor leagues. He had a 40% hard contact rate, and his max exit velocity was 110, which is kind of in that threshold where you want to see.
Yeah, where the power is actually legitimate. It speaks to his raw power, and that's why maybe the power is playing up early in the majors until pitchers adapt, because we just never saw a huge power output. And although he was kind of piecing together some power this year, or was it in 2019? I dropped his page, to be honest. I just know it was recently. It was in 2019. We saw him put up 16 home runs. Over 126 games, not so much, but seven home runs over 41 games is a better pace, obviously. And then we don't know how he did in 2020 in terms of improving during the whole COVID situation. So that's why a lot of like minor leaguers as a whole need to almost be reset. Like your thoughts on them, your outlook on them, and when you go and look at them, you gotta have an open mind, because what we saw in 2019 doesn't mean it's gonna be the same player we see in 2021, because there's a year that just isn't there that we have to figure out what happened at the alt sites or in their private training camps or whatever they did. It's just a reminder that prospects are more like are trickier than ever to figure out. But another call up, Ramon Urias. I don't really know how I feel about him. Joe's fist pumping for those who are can't watch. No one's watching. We're just video. We do podcasts via video. Joe is fist pumping. Take it away, Joe.
This is my guy. This was my guy in the preseason. One of those deep minor league type sleeper guys that I thought could possibly hit. And this season, the line might not excite you for fantasy, but he's been pretty good. A 250 batting average, 341 on base percentage, and a 431 slug. It's pretty good for a major league hitter. He does have 3 home runs this year, and I think the power is legit. In the minors, he had a 91 average exit velocity, 47% hard contact rate, and the max exit velocity was around 107. His major league career, about 90% average mile. Oh, sorry. It just had a word scramble. 90 mile an hour average exit velocity, a 40% hard contact rate, and a 110 max EV. This is a guy that he came over from the Cardinals, wasn't much prospect type around him, but again, a solid overall package. He doesn't have a tool that excites you, which I think hurts his, you know, his ceiling, but he's someone that when you put all the tools together, he has good plate discipline. He has good contact skills. I ran my expected strikeout and walk rate algorithm for him. Came out to around a 20% strikeout rate and a 10% walk rate. In today's game, that's pretty good. And this would give me a line around maybe a 270 batting average, 25 home runs. He's got a little bit of speed, but doesn't run on the base pass. So maybe 5 stolen bases and, you know, 170 runs plus RBIs. So someone that he has a good ballpark. He's got all these things going for him. I really think with Galvis out, he could kind of hit the ground running and we might see one of the surprise. I want to be nice, but no name breakouts.
Here's the thing. People in outside of fantasy circles probably know who Ramon Urias is. The problem is a lot of these names aren't very, like, people who listen to fantasy podcasts don't hear a lot of these names because they're not the top prospects, the top 50, the top 100. These guys are probably, most of these, if not all of them, except for Patino, have been outside people's top 100 entering the year and probably over the last couple of years even. So calling them no-name prospects, yeah, I'm with you. Just like, I understand you're not trying to be mean or anything, and somehow we have a family member listening. It's not out of disrespect. It's just the fact that fantasy baseball circles don't know prospect lists as deep. Majority of the time, there's a lot of really good fantasy players that are well aware of who these players are. But I'd say vast majority don't, because vast majority of players, what, play in 10, 12 team leagues, which don't need, and redraft leagues at that, so they don't need to have this deeper league knowledge / deeper prospect pool. But regardless, we can move forward to Bailey Falter, not Ober, but Bailey Ober did falter. That's kind of funny how it works. But anyways, Bailey Falter, tell me about him.
Yeah, he's been really, really solid this season, major leagues. I don't have the numbers right in front of me.
Five games, 13 innings pitched. He has like sub-1. He has a 29.2 K minus walk. He's walking literally less than one. His walks per nine is under one. Like, let's just say that. With really good home run suppression. Home runs are kind of a bit of an issue right now. It's like the only thing he's given up are home runs, if anything. But anyway, sorry. I just pulled up his page, so I happen to have him in front of me.
Yeah, no. I appreciate that. I'll give you a name, and this isn't an exact comp, but someone, a skill set he kind of reminds me of, hopefully Dave McDonald isn't listening, is Zach Plesac. Because
except for one costs a lot in draft, and in draft season, the other one is free off the waiver wire.
Exactly. And the reason he's not going to be Zach Plesac, but the reason I compare him to there is his pitches, movement profile, velocity, none of it stands out to you. It's pretty below average, really. But his command is so great. It's fantastic that I think his command is playing a big part in how he's getting strikeout. And something Eno has said is, hey, slider command might be more important than your actual slider movement. And when I look at his heat map, that command on that slider is literally just red in the spot. So he's got good command of the slider. So that could be a positive going forward. I don't believe he is a 30% strikeout guy, but if he's a 23% strikeout guy with like a 5%, 4% batting average, and maybe gives up a little bit more than a fly ball, maybe a 0.9 fly ball to ground ball ratio, pretty good player for fantasy. Maybe good, not good in the shallow league, maybe not, but like in those deeper leagues, he might be a good streaming option at least for you. And, you know, maybe ride the hot hand while you have it right now.
And it shows he obviously hasn't started a game, so he's in a piggyback role because he's pitching three innings, four innings. Like, he could get some cheap wins, stuff like that, which is always helpful. And maybe he gets, maybe that's, this is just their way of obviously stretching him out. But it's interesting because if Plesac was this good, we would really be happy with Dave liking Plesac so much. But now we all blame Dave for Plesac's demise. But we'll see. Yeah, in all seriousness, though, it's what's encouraging, though, is that strikeout rate you mentioned. He had it in the minor in AAA this year, 36.2%. So, although, again, you're right, I'm not buying a 30% strikeout rate from a rookie, but it's still encouraging that he showed the skill set prior to the call-up. So there is some legitimacy there, is all. And we'll see. Maybe he can have the same type of half year that Plesac had, and then he flies off draft boards way too early, and we regret it next year. Moving over to another, it's like the same teams. You know why? It's all the same teams having all the call-ups because they're the teams moving players. They're the teams that have all these extra pieces in the minor leagues from years of stashing them. Ryan McKenna of the Baltimore Orioles. He has a little bit of power. He's shown some speed. This one's been all right. He's obviously off to a slower start, hitting only 200 with just one stolen base, no home runs. But it is Baltimore. As it heats up, the ball will fly. But I don't know. I'm looking at his numbers, and the strikeouts are uncharacteristically high, but it's also his first taste of the majors, but he's still walking at a double-digit clip. I'm just torn on how I should feel about Ryan McKenna. Can you help me feel a certain way?
Yeah. When I was doing my deep dive into him yesterday after he's gotten major league experience, I was kind of surprised because coming up through the minors, I believe he was seen more of a speed guy, kind of one of those, because he had like one season where he had like 30 steals or something. And I think his power might actually be better than his speed, at least the raw skill set. Because throughout the minor leagues, he's had great exit velocities. He's been hitting the ball hard. And then in the major leagues, we get a taste of his sprint speed, and it's average. It's like 27 feet per second, which is like literally exactly 50. Now the interesting thing with speed, I know we get into sprint speed doesn't matter, but it is, you, if you want to steal, you'll probably steal. And we've heard that. It's about intention to steal. But when someone has an average sprint speed, I usually don't think they're going to be a 20 stolen base guy. Maybe if he led off every game, but I don't even know how much playing time he's going to have. He got called up. He started the first three games. And then I believe the next two he sat. So I was honestly going to put in a fab bid for him this week until I saw that he had sat the last two games. I don't know if they have room to play him right now, but he's someone that kind of excites me. He's got a potential 2020 profile there. The strikeouts do concern me. I think they'll probably come down more to mid 20 range. Plate discipline, I'm sorry, I didn't even look this up. I believe his plate discipline has been pretty good throughout the minors.
Just looking at it. It was like he's had double digit walk rates all through the minors. It was pretty impressive. It's just the strikeouts have always meandered around like 23 to 25%. So now that he's at the majors, does Ryan McKenna start striking out 30% of the time? Is that like a realistic? That could be realistic, at least in the short term, until he adjusts. So Ryan McKenna is a guy that, like, the play discipline kind of concerns me because the strikeout rates were what would be considered league average at the major league level before he even got there. So now that he's here, I expect him to have issues. But what encourages me is the walk rate. Having a double-digit walk rate still as a major leaguer suggests that his plate discipline's still there. He's just going to have to either maybe adjust, maybe swing more at first pitches, maybe just get comfortable hitting major league pitching. I mean, he's a rookie. It is what it is. First taste of the majors, it's going to be a little bit of some growing pains there for most players, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And there's another McKenna. I don't know if they're related or not. Alex McKenna, I get their plate profile sometimes mixed up, so that's where I was.
Hey, it happens, man. But we can move on to a guy known for his speed first profile in Jared Oliva. Oddly enough, after stealing 33 bases in 2018, 36 in 2019, he has just one this year in 15 games at AAA and none so far since he's been called up. I mean, we're talking about two games and five plate appearances. However, what I see here is opportunity. Unfortunately, he's also striking out a ton more this year already in the minors as well. 60%, so three of his five at bats so far he struck out in the majors. However, speed's at a premium. You need it, go get it. This is your guy. But I don't know if I'm really all that optimistic otherwise.
So here's my first question. They currently have Gregory Polanco, Brian Reynolds, and Ben Gamel as the projected starters for Pittsburgh according to Roster Resource. Do we think Oliva sits the bench with those three guys?
I think maybe in the short term because of They want. They're gonna end up. I think they trade Polanco. I think they trade Reynolds, and I think they trade Gamble if they can. Like they're gonna. They're sellers. The Pirates are sellers, and Reynolds is probably gonna bring back the most. Reynolds has been fantastic this year. He's every bit deserving of being an all-star. He's been like he's back to what he was in 2019. So if you gotta think they're gonna really try to shop Reynolds, see what they can get out of him. Polanco, I think they'll try as well. I think Reynolds for sure gets moved though, because he's by far the most useful commodity, and he'll probably bring back a solid return too, because you got to think a lot of teams are probably gonna go after him. But regardless, I think there's a path to playing time in the near future. That's how I look at it. So if you have, again, we talked about stashing is hard to do, but if you really need some speed, like if you are desperate for stolen bases, and this is your guy, because I mean, outside of his short stint in AAA this year, he's always been a 30 stolen base guy in the minors. He's always double digits, to say the least. 15 is his lowest amount, and that was in just 56 games in 2017 in low A. I don't see why Jared Olivo isn't a guy to just, like, if you are, like I said, you have to be desperate. I'm not going after him unless I'm desperate for stolen bases, but I mean, there are leagues where I can understand being desperate for stolen bases, because I think he's gonna get his fair share of playing time, especially in the near future. Again, he's a guy, but it's hard. It's just hard to justify stashing a guy like that, given his struggles in AAA, even given the early struggles in his first little bit of games here. I don't know. I would try to find steals elsewhere, but some places don't have them elsewhere. This is like a Hail Mary play, in my opinion. And I'm talking about Jared Olivo here.
Yeah, this is, I'm kind of surprised he hasn't hit for more power throughout the minor leagues. He doesn't have like crazy raw power, but he had in his 2017 zero home runs, 2018 nine, and 2019 six. So he hasn't had much power in the minor leagues, but this may be a potential buy low per se for the power, because I think he could be a 15 and maybe, if everything goes right, even a 20 home run guy over the course of a full season. How about this comp? How about, well, he's doing really well this year, so people are going to take this the wrong way, but what if he does what kind of Whit Merrifield did when he made his debut?
I think you'd be hopeful. there's just a lot of, like I said, for me, it's a lot. The plate discipline is a big question mark right now, especially given his struggles in AAA. I think like the time he was ready to come up was in 2019, and they waited until 2021, and now maybe he wasn't ready. And the problem is the difference between Whit Merrifield and him is, if you look at 2016 when Whit Merrifield came up, he was able to put together a 21.7% strikeout rate during that season when he came up in 2018. Whereas I'm looking forward again. Sorry, I lost it. Here it is. 2016 is when he made major league debut, 21.7%. And he never had a strikeout rate above 20.1% at any level in the minors prior to that. So Whit Merrifield had plate discipline that Oliva doesn't. And that's where I think the big concern is, because you got to get on base to steal the bases. And if you're not going to have good OBP, you have to have good batting average. And even in his first taste of the majors, Whit had that batting average, whereas Oliva might not, given the potential to strike out 30% of the time. But other than that, the comp makes sense. Two home runs, eight stolen bases, and a 5.7% walk rate. The rest is kind of in line with what Whit did. It's the strikeouts that are the big difference, and why I think he could or might or should probably come up short of that comp. But I understand the skill set comp with sprinkling a couple home runs, but be more of a stolen base threat. Just don't know if I think he could hit 230 in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why his plate discipline this year, Oliva I'm talking about, has a 30% strikeout rate. It's only 50 plate appearances, but still smart. That's not what we expect to see from a guy whose hit tool was pretty highly regarded.
I mean, again, going back to 2017 through 2019, it's always been around 20 to 22%, the strikeout rate for Oliva. So to see it jump up to 37.5% so far, again, we're talking, I was in 2020 for six games. Then the strikeouts followed him into 2021, it seems like, at 30.8% in AAA. And then now, obviously, can't really talk about 60% strikeout rate in 2021, but here we are. That's what, five plate appearances. Yeah, that doesn't count for nothing. There's a lot to be determined there. He's just a guy that it's hard to find a spot in the roster for him. Just maybe more or less keep your eye on him, like add him to your watch list and see where it goes. Because if he gets hot, starts getting on base, and next thing you know, those stolen bases are coming, he's super valuable to a lot of teams, right? He would be super valuable. But a guy that I don't know if I'm really interested in, but maybe you can talk me into him, is Ryan Weathers. I've just looked at his game log, and it's like, meh. It's a bunch of meh. Whatever. I don't think he's truly fully healthy from that injury he had from the beginning of the year, but that's just me. What do you think about Ryan Weathers?
Yeah, Weathers, if I believe, at least early on the season, we haven't seen him go deep into games, which that's for fantasy always concerning, especially if he gets pulled before he can even qualify for the win. His pitch mix, he's more of a four-seam slider guy, but neither his four-seam fastball has as almost as much drop as his sinker. That's weird. But I mean, that might be, looking at it, his H break is crazy at 11.5 inches. So short term, I'm going to say Weathers is not that interesting, but I'm curious his spin direction on his four seam fastball, because I bet you he could tilt the spin direction more towards 12 o'clock. Yep. Yeah. So his spin-based movement on that four-seam is 10-15. So if he tilted that more to 12, then he could have more rise on his fastball. And then I think it becomes more interesting.
Gotcha. Yeah. That, I feel like that's something like an off-season adjustment would probably be more likely to happen for Ryan Weathers. So you're thinking, so more like in redraft, ignore him, but in maybe go out and field some buy-low offer, try to throw out some buy-low offers on Ryan Weathers is what you'd suggest, probably see where it goes. Cause I'm sure he won't cost much in terms of acquisition costs for your fantasy teams.
Yeah, no, he won't cost much at all.
You can probably get him as a throw-in.
Yeah. And that it's very, when we talk about pitch mix change or changing your spin direction on your pitches, we have to be honest here. I have no clue if he'll do that or not. There's a chance he could say, shut up, Joe, go away. He's not even listening anyways. But
if you were his pitching coach for a day, you would try to get him to work on that. Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's your solution to his problems or potential problems.
Exactly. So I think if he just changed that spin direction a little bit more upright, you don't want to go out exactly 12 o'clock because then your fastball just becomes straight. But, you know, tilt it maybe 11:30, 11:15, he could get more rise. And I think that fastball will then play up and...
Or just give him the sticky stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what does he have to lose? Oh, he's going to get suspended for a couple games. Oh, that's a shame. Like, he's not pitching deep into him anyway.
Paid suspension, too.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's not really, it's more of a day off.
Yeah,
paid vacation. All right, we're gonna finish off this podcast with two more Pittsburgh Pirates because we hate ourselves and Pirates are the team to talk about. It's crazy. Let's talk about Pablo. I'm gonna save the guy you mentioned before the show as your favorite for last. We're gonna save the best for last here. So we're gonna go into Pablo Reyes first. Well, he's not even a Pittsburgh Pirate. He was a former Pittsburgh Pirate. That's my bad. He's a Milwaukee Brewer. I'm joking. JK, LOL. All right. So former Pittsburgh Pirate, now Milwaukee Brewer, Pablo Reyes. Two stolen bases on the year, no home runs. Striking, interesting plate discipline because he's walking only 2% of the time so far, but still striking out at better than league average. So low BABIP, should probably regress positively there. Pablo Reyes, the Milwaukee Brewers own Pablo Reyes. Tell me about him.
And I know you guys are probably sitting at home, first of all, saying, who is Pablo Reyes? And second of all, why are they talking about him? And the truth is, I made the worksheet and I want to talk about Pablo Reyes because this is a guy I think I wrote back in 2017, potential deep league, minor league sleeper. But I'll make it quick with what I like about him. His plate profile, even though it hasn't really shown up in the majors yet, he has a good chase rate, he makes contact, and he hits the ball in the air. Exit velocities are probably better than you'd assume, around 89-mile-an-hour average exit velocity and 35% hard contact rate. The big problem with him when I was looking at him a while ago was he played in Pittsburgh. Now he goes from PNC Park to the park in Milwaukee, so that's a big boost in park factor. And when you have a guy with middling power, I think that change in park factor could really play a big part in seeing improvement. And he does have speed, but I don't think he'll steal much. But I just love this profile of guy. He's currently on the bench. I don't think he's going to start over anyone right now, but he's just someone I like to throw out there just to watch the name. If he starts hitting the ground running, don't ignore it. Just be like someone to keep an eye on base. He's not a top prospect. He's already 27 years old, so the Brewers don't have to play him, but he's someone I just kind of wanted to say, hey, he's there, he's back in the majors, maybe just keep an eye on him.
So this is more of a, hey, I was on them years ago. I'm hoping for the best, but really there's not much there right now. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I can respect that though. And finally, circling back to a true Pittsburgh Pirate, because, you know, I can't be completely wrong. Your guy, the one that you're most excited about, Max Kranich, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but you mentioned how you really in on him. So please elaborate.
Yeah. So I believe after his start in the major leagues, which I don't know. Well, I do kind of know why he got sent down, I think, squad, but he did well. He let up zero earned runs. I believe he went 4 or 5 innings. And what I like about him, he has a slider that has a lot of horizontal movement, considering it comes in at 88 miles an hour. If you throw an 88 mile an hour slider, I'm just going to be honest, that automatically catches my eye right there. Because I say, hey, look, a fast slider that you can command, I like that. That plays. Yeah. And then his four seam, it's hard to rate. Let me say this. It's hard to rate pitches right now, especially someone that gets called up with no sticky stuff, because our baselines are skewed, if that makes sense. So we had pitchers that had like 9% of rise, like 9 inches vertical movement on their fastball. And we're probably not going to see that again. So a lot of our data, pitch movement data, is kind of skewed right now. His vertical movement on his four seam says it's below average. There's a chance that 5% or 15 inches of vertical movement might be around lead right now with less sticky stuff in the lead. Comes in at 94. It isn't straight. So he's got a good four seam and slider to work off of. Changeup, curveball, I'm not big into. So if he's more of a four seam slider guy, there's a chance he might just be a 5-inning guy. But I really like the potential here. He's got good command. I think this is someone that if he has good matchups, gets called back up, I'm probably going to spend some money on him. I really like this potential. Usually these guys, it's very hard to find these type of potential plays that you can almost get for nothing. Because we've seen with Daniel Lynch, Logan Gilbert, who are the other top pitching prospects that I've got called up? McClanahan, Manoa, all of them.
Mackenzie Gore. Oh, wait. I feel so bad, man. We all rooted for that. And it's just like him and Whitley.
Whitley, yeah.
Crazy. That's why tin snap is a thing, you know? There's no such thing as a pitching prospect.
Yeah, and we've seen with these pitching prospects, with Fab Leagues especially, we've seen how crazy it's been to pick them up, and then they get sent back down later. Kranich is a guy that I think if he gets called back up, it doesn't take much to get him. And he could probably give you the same potential as those guys, honestly, at least for this season. So someone I'm definitely watching this year. And if he gets the call up, probably going
to
spend.
Gotcha. Well, that was a good, sweet, short to the point show. My favorite kind. Joe, as always, thanks again for joining me. I love that you bring these every week. Last week, I couldn't come through. That's my fault. But this week I did. Anyways, Joe, remind everybody where they can follow you, what you got going on and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So you guys can follow me on Twitter at JoeGentileFT. Right now, currently working on like 12 things, and I'm sure only one of them will get completed, but
I feel that.
currently working, I finished the expected strikeout and walk percentage algorithm. Currently working on a StatCast batted ball data, and I'm also working on an article on possibly figuring out how pitches determine a batter's batted ball profile.
Interesting. A lot of good stuff. So don't forget to follow Joe again at JoeGentileFT. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. We appreciate it as always. And hopefully we'll catch you next week. I say that because I never know, honestly. The summer vacation is tough with the kids being home and everything, but I do make my best effort. Joe carries the show. I just host it. So thanks again, Joe, for all the hard work. And we will talk to you guys soon.